This is Savannah's Dead, written by Taryn P. Lupo, narrated by Adam Lishua. If you like this audio, please consider helping Taryn out by purchasing this and his other ebooks at any major online store. Savannah's Dead. Beauregard searched his pockets until he found his trusted notebook and pen. He ignored the sign that read "Closed at Nightfall" and continued towards the entrance. "Let's hurry, Amber. It looks like they're about to start without us." The two walked under an arched, bent-up, wrought-iron gate that said "Savannah Cemetery." They hurried down the gravel road and into the darkness. Ancient live oak trees dripped with Spanish moss, creating a canopy over the trail. Little sparkles of starlight broke through the candelabra-like branches, illuminating the slab tombstones in the eerie blue light. Beauregard pointed at Amber's chest. "You should probably cover up that shirt so they don't know who we're with. If they know we're with Ghost Skeptic Magazine, they'll probably throw us out of the tour before we even get started." Beauregard pulled the two sides of her sweater together over her chest, buttoned it, and in doing so helped Amber conceal the Ghost Skeptic Magazine logo on her polo. As they hastened down the dark path toward a faint light in the distance, Amber tripped on a protruding root. Beauregard picked her up, and they continued towards the group waiting on them in the distance. He spoke quietly under his breath to her as they approached the large group of tourists. "I can't believe so many people fall for these silly ghost tours. How many ghost hunters have we debunked now? I think we are over 30 at last count." Amber just ignored him and watched for more roots in the moonlight. Beauregard continued, "It amazes me that so many people spend their hard-earned money on this bunch of garbage. We need to meet the head storyteller before the group gets going. I know this is supposed to be the most haunted cemetery in America, so I can't wait to hear what kind of tall tales this woman tells. Come on, let's go meet her before it's too late and the tour starts." The skeptical man approached the tour guide, examining her appearance. She was dressed for the part in a Victorian gown, fancy hairstyle, period jewelry, and even had an old railroad lantern to sell the outfit. The ghost debunker offered his hand and introduced himself. "Hi, I'm Beauregard, and this is my partner, Amber. Sorry we're late. We're looking forward to hearing all your haunted tales on such a gloomy night." The tour guide rolled her eyes, annoyed, and stated, "Hello. My name is Sandy. You are very late." She rudely turned her back to the couple and gathered everyone together. "Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Now that the rest of our guests have arrived, we can begin the tour. It is my pleasure to be your night tour guide in America's most haunted cemetery. Consider yourselves lucky. Only a very few people ever get permission to be on this hallowed ground after midnight." Sandy held the old lantern up to shine a better light on the crowd. To Beauregard's surprise, he noticed how underdressed he was in his jeans and polo. He removed his baseball hat and rubbed an annoying sore spot on his head. Most everyone in the crowd looked like they had just come from the tour from a formal party. This made him and Amber stand out even more. "Well, I guess a staying low profile is out of the question," he thought to himself. Sandy, holding the railroad lantern, moved deeper into the foreboding graveyard. The large mob followed. Off in the distance, Beauregard noticed a dim light deep in the graveyard. It was much too far away for anyone to get a good look at who was holding it. "I thought this was a private tour. I guess some kids must be trespassing and up to no good." "Whatever. As long as they don't ruin my tour, I guess I don't care if someone else is out here," he thought. The guide told her guests the history of the cemetery as they traversed the massive property and its twisted, crooked lanes. "This is one of the oldest graveyards in Savannah. When Colonial Park Cemetery overflowed with thousands of bodies, the city decided to open a few more cemeteries. Some of these gravestones and markers here are from the 1730s when Savannah was founded. The property ownership has transferred hands through many private families through the years." Sandy paused and held her lamp up high to emphasize the next part. Every family that ever owned this property rapidly fell victim to its curse. Reports of extremely violent hauntings would immediately start as soon as a family would transfer title. Even worse, death ravished the families who dared live in the keeper's house. Within 2 years of moving into the house, half or more of the family would die by mysterious circumstances. She adjusted her tight dress collar. After the pattern of terror repeated in 7 families, no person would buy the place. Eventually it fell into the city's care, and that is who keeps it maintained now, although many locals strongly believe the city's ownership cursed Savannah forever. Beauregard stood in the back and quietly wrote down notes in a patch of moonlight. He whispered to Amber, "There's no way all that happened to 7 families in a row. When we get back, we are going through the chain of ownership with a fine-toothed comb." The dim lamp continued to move in the distance. Beauregard had a strange feeling he was being followed. He looked over his shoulder at the light in the distance. It seemed to be silently mirroring the group's movements. After a few more turns, the guide stopped at a headstone. "Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to the Butcher of Savannah. Here lies Michelle Ramsey. In the early 1900s, everyone knew her name. Savannah was once home to the first car races in America. At one race, a runaway car flipped into the spectators and hit several people, including Michelle. She suffered a horrible head injury, and her doctors assumed she would die. Miss Ramsey somehow pulled through and recovered, but part of her skull was crushed in, creating a visible soft spot on her head." Sandy pointed at a spot over her right ear. "Her family said she was never quite the same after the injury, and something about her personality was just off. Although Michelle tried to hide the injury with her hairstyle and hats, Savannah was a very small town. Everyone knew it was there. In 18 years... others mean, young adults would poke it or flick the soft spot with their fingers. Michelle would respond by howling like a wolf, running in a circle, and then drooling for about 5 minutes. When she finally gained her wits about her, she would run away embarrassed. But she never forgot the children who were cruel to her. One winter, during Michelle's freshman year of high school, her classmates started to vanish. Large-scale manhunts were organized to find the missing children, but the search parties never found any bodies. One spring day during a baseball game at the stadium in Daffin Park, Michelle's dog, Bones, ran onto the field with the child's leg in his mouth, shoe intact. The police were called, and eventually, weeks later, a stash of arms and legs were found hidden near what is now the fishing lake in Daffin Park. Back then, the lake was a huge swimming pool shaped like the United States. It had a sandy beach and the park had camping sites. When the air warmed, the stench of decaying human flesh permeated the air. It was then that the body parts of 6 of Michelle's missing classmates were discovered, hidden in the crawlspace under the bathhouse. None of their heads were ever found, save one." Sandy pointed at the headstone. "The murders were traced back to the disturbed child when Michelle's neighbor found her dogs, Bones and Bridget, fighting over the decaying skull of one of the missing children in Michelle's front yard. She was promptly sentenced and hanged in the old Savannah jail. It was the first time I know of where a child was executed in Savannah, Georgia. The family had the Butcher of Savannah buried here in the poor side of the graveyard. Even to this day, the cemetery keepers report seeing a young girl running in circles, howling like a wolf in the twilight hours." The tour guide ushered the group along. "Let's keep moving. I want to show you another famous Savannah resident." Beauregard scribbled some notes in his handy notebook and then whispered to Amber, "We're going to have to check this story out when we get back to the office. That sounded like a fairy tale horror story, if you ask me. You know, these con artist tour guides just make stuff up to make their stories more interesting." The dim lantern stopped outside a large, elaborate crypt. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the famous Llewellyn family crypt. Fancy family crypts might seem out of date now, but back in the day it was a sign of real wealth. Entire families would come out and spend whole days inside the crypts to commune with the dead. This family would cook out, drink, and even spend the night sleeping inside the crypt. Sandy lofted the light next to the entrance. Notice the steel door welded shut on the front here. The official story was that grave robbers were stealing valuable Masonic and family heirlooms from the underground chamber. We know the real story, and it doesn't have anything to do with robbers. They welded that door shut to keep something in. Beauregard started taking notes, and a mischievous smile crept across his face. The lady in the Victorian dress continued, "Underneath this crypt is an entire chamber laid out for Masonic ceremonies. Savannah has the oldest lodge in the country, and many residents of this graveyard were Masons. So these ritual chambers are not wholly uncommon. Many new lodge members were trained in these underground rooms. Unfortunately, caretakers and locals heard noises from under the ground. They could hear Masonic ceremonies going on below ground even when nobody was around. It disturbed people so much that the Llewellyn family decided to remove all the thrones, Masonic icons, and even the massive altar in the clandestine room. They moved everything to storage and put a large lock on the crypt." Her eyes turned black and she leaned in to deliver more of a scary effect. 2 days later, folks kept hearing chanting from the underground room. The staff unlocked the crypt and went down into the chambers to investigate, but the workers fled in terror after seeing the room completely full of its original decorations, all the fancy Masonic thrones, artifacts, and even the heavy altar had been returned to their original position. Sandy continued, saying, "The Llewellyn family removed the contents of the room 2 more times, but the furniture found its way back each time. Even burglars robbed the sacred room, and within a week, all the property mysteriously reappeared. People became so scared of the chanting and restless souls in the underground rooms that they demanded the family seal up the crypt forever. They figured, since they could not remove the ghosts from the chamber, they would make sure they would not get out and roam Savannah." Beauregard turned to Amber. "I bet the family staged the whole thing for attention. You know all they did was remove the room's decorations and reassemble it when nobody was watching. This story smells like bunk." Sandy pointed down the road. "I want to take you to a party that was so good, it never ended. It's down by this clearing. Please, follow me." The tour meandered down the dark gravel path at a slow pace. Beauregard noticed off in the distance the same dim light that had been following them from the beginning, still far away, but matching the group's pace. Sandy pointed to a clearing of grass in the graveyard. "Ladies and gentlemen, you are standing on the location of Savannah's best party. The celebration was so good that it never stopped. On this site in 1760 stood the 4-story mansion of Sir David Reeves. That was, of course, before this area became part of the graveyard. He was a fabulously wealthy man, his wealth stemming from rum-running and smuggling into Savannah. Sir Reeves bribed all of the right bureaucrats and owned Savannah's underground. To keep the social wheels greased, he would throw a magnificent party every New Year's Eve." The guide walked into the clearing. "People would do anything to be invited to this grand event. The guests were fed exotic foods from all over the world. They danced live music and, of course, drank copious amounts of illegal booze. At that time, Savannah was still under General Oglethorpe's probation, and liquor was illegal." Sandy traced the area in the grass. "The entrance to the house used to be right here, and this is the area the partygoers watched the entertainment. During the party, a fire started on the top floor. Instead of panicking, Sir Reeves ordered his servants to bring all the furniture into the yard and set it up to watch the special event. He then told his guests he had a special performance for them. The partygoers had no idea the house was on fire, but shuffled into the yard and sat in the furniture. As the house went up in a tower of flames, the guests applauded and continued to drink. The host joined his friends and enjoyed the show. The group just assumed it was done on purpose and continued partying into the morning hours. Sadly, a few guests refused to leave the flaming mansion and continued drinking while they burned alive in the house. Sandy put her finger to her mouth in a hushing motion. If you stay really quiet, you can hear the music of the party and the glasses clanging together. To this day, people sneak into the cemetery to party with the spirits. It is rumored that if you hold up a glass of booze and offer a toast, a ghost will clang the glass and you will hear colonial music and laughter. Drink 'em if you got 'em, folks, because it's time to move on. The woman in the white flowing dress moved out of the clearing and started heading down the musty trail. The tour shuffled along after her as Beauregard stayed behind to make notes. This story should be pretty easy to confirm, Amber. Let me get down the names and dates. He pointed to the horizon. Amber, do you see that light off in the distance? I think it is following us. I bet it's just some kids waiting for us to leave so they can party with these ghosts. I would have done the same thing at their age to see if it really works. Oh, come on, let's catch up before we get lost out here. The two skeptics double-timed their pace to catch up with the tour. Beauregard stopped when he noticed they were standing in a clearing with rows of tiny headstones. The grave markers laid flat on the ground and looked more like large bricks than gravestones. Most of the markers were illegible and too worn to read. Sandy spoke up. "Ladies and gentlemen, be careful where you tread. We are now standing in the children's section. Let me introduce to you the children of Savannah's yellow fever epidemic. During 1820, a terrible outbreak of yellow fever swept through Savannah. 666 victims died during the outbreak, so the locals were convinced it was the devil who sent the plague. The city wanted to downplay the outbreak and keep people from knowing how bad it was. To contain the sickness, the ill worked locked away in an underground tunnel and were left to die. After this dark past was discovered, nameless children's corpses were removed from the tunnels and relocated here." Beauregard challenged the tour guide, saying, "I have a hard time believing that city officials would bury children alive." "Oh, the city or the hospital that helped entomb the bodies never admitted to it and denied this event ever happened," Sandy retorted. "The problem was that employees of the hospital admitted it happened, and there was a pile of skeletons nobody could explain. Rumor is that late at night you can hear children crying and coughing from these graves. The sounds of children dying are so disturbing that the keeper will not even go into this area at night." "I don't believe this story at all," Beauregard whispered to Amber. "Nobody would ever do that to sick kids." The woman with the lamp motioned the group to move along. "Let's move on before we wake the children. Follow me. I want to show you one of this cemetery's darkest secrets." As they continued to walk to the next clearing, Beauregard felt like he was being watched. He scanned the horizon and elbowed his companion in the ribs. "Look, Amber, there's that light again. I am sure it is following us." Sandy stopped in a circle of enormous live oaks, magnolia, and poplar trees. Massive, crooked branches pointed at the ground with the ends turned toward the sky in a right angle. The founder of this graveyard was a philanthropist at heart, but he was also a businessman. "I'm sure you've noticed all the amazing artwork, statues, and crypts. To be buried here was a status symbol because it was the most expensive resting place in town. In fact, this cemetery had a committee who had to give approval before burials were allowed. The owners knew this would help keep the less desirable families out and keep the price of the plots high. But there was one secret loophole. The founder had a rule. If anyone ever died on the property, they would be buried for free." The tour guide continued with her tale as she pointed at the trees. "As with all secrets, it eventually got out, but when people discovered they could be buried here for free, they just started committing suicide on the property. I guess you could say folks were just dying to get in here. These southern trees bear strange fruit, and more than 56 persons were found hanging in this area known as Stretched Neck Yard. Later, it was discovered that not all of the hangings were suicide. They were, rather, murders and lynchings disguised as suicide. Beauregard chuckled. Amber, this is the first story, I believe. Never underestimate the extent people will go to for free stuff. The tour guide continued. The graveyard still honors its founder's wishes, but they try to keep this arrangement secret to the public. Residents and visitors over the years say that at sunrise they have heard ropes creaking and have caught glimpses of hanging bodies blowing in the wind. It is even rumored that one patron actually got a picture, but it is blurry and tough to see. Beauregard rubbed the sore spot on his head. Why is it all the ghosts, monsters, and Bigfoot pictures are always far away and blurry? Do you think they have some sort of cloaking device that aliens lend them? Do they all have a space gadget that distorts space around them and makes them fuzzy when folks take pictures? Sandy shot the man a nasty look. Come along before you hear the corpses blowing in the wind. The marsh fog grew thick and brought its marsh stink with it. The mist overwhelmed Sandy's little lantern, but somehow the tour group found their way and continued to follow her. They arrived at a fenced-off area with family plots. Sandy pointed at a headstone in the gated location. Here's one of our strangest residents, Mrs. Ivy Hurst. Her marker is the tall stone in the middle. She is surrounded by her 8 children's graves. She died in 1910 when Halley's Comet came. Most of her children died in the 50s and 60s, but all were buried here. Does anyone notice anything unusual with this family site? Beauregard surveyed the site and finally spoke up. She had 8 children, but I don't see a headstone for the husband. Very good. It was very scandalous for the time period. Mrs. Hurst swore her husband was repeatedly impregnating her, but nobody in Savannah had ever met him. Every time she was pressed on the issue, she explained that he worked overseas and he would only come to Savannah for a few days a year. She inherited a great deal of money and had an estate right across the marshes, right over there, Sandy said and pointed out the dark swamp. She continued, Over the years, Mrs. Hurst blew through her fortune. Upon her death, Mrs. Hurst's family lost the fabulous estate to the tax man. All that was left was this family plot that she had purchased years before. Around the 1990s, a developer purchased the dilapidated estate and knocked it down to build waterfront condos. During the excavation, the workers found partially preserved bodies that later were determined to be almost 100 years old. Eventually, 8 female bodies were recovered and an investigation was started. Recovered from one of the bodies was a locket engraved with the dead woman's name inside. This led the investigators to a missing Savannah woman who disappeared in the late 1890s. The woman was pregnant and unwed. The locals just assumed she left town in shame and never really investigated it. After a good bit of detective work, investigators began to notice a pattern forming. One unwed pregnant woman would disappear every year for 8 straight years. Sandy's demeanor grew dark as she continued. The investigators realized that every time a pregnant woman disappeared, Mrs. Hurst delivered a baby within the same week. Eventually, a chest was recovered, hidden in the wall of the basement at the dig site. It contained Mrs. Hurst's diaries, complete with surgical tools and special prosthetics made to simulate looking pregnant under her dresses. Mrs. Ivy Hurst concocted a grand plan. She would pretend to be with child for 9 months, and then would hunt down an unwed mother, murder her, and take her child. She pretended to have a new baby and raised it as her own. Every year she repeated this process until she herself had a nice, big family. DNA tests were taken from the children's graves and were then compared to the newly discovered bodies. Each matched up. Some people hoard stray cats. This lady collected children. These days, Mrs. Hurst has been nicknamed Savannah's child hoarder. Beauregard made a note to double-check the facts of this tale when he returned to his office. Sandy lifted her light and pointed towards Mrs. Hurst's former estate across the marsh. The keeper was said to have seen 8 wailing ghosts come from the former estate and float across the marsh to this area. It is assumed to be the missing mothers searching for their children. That story is complete balderdash, Beauregard mumbled aloud. The tour guide groaned at the annoying man and waved everyone else on. Come on, people, it is getting late, and I still have to tell you about Savannah's dead ringer. Sandy stopped at an expensive-looking headstone and statue of a woman holding a large bell. This is the final resting place of David Burke. He was quite the socialite and was considered Savannah's most eligible bachelor during the 1820s. He wooed women from old money and married his way into wealth. His life was perfect, except for one thing. He complained to his new wife that he was having nightmares of being buried alive. He complained and badgered his new wife until she relented and gave him enough money to build this elaborate grave you are looking at now. Mr. Burke contracted with a company to have a dead ringer installed so the family could be sure he was actually dead when he was buried. Beauregard interrupted.
Excuse me, but what's a dead ringer?
Sandy rolled her eyes at the question. When people were dying from plagues and pandemics, many folks were mistaken for dead and were buried alive. The man interrupted again before she could explain.
How would someone ever know if they were accidentally buried somebody alive?
Two ways, actually, Sandy retorted. The first way was discovered when a body was exhumed. Scratch marks and fingernails were found inside the lid of the coffin. The second way was the invention of the dead ringer.
And what was the dead ringer again?
He continued, cutting her off again. The tour guide had lost all patience with him. I had not yet explained what it is because you keep interrupting me. A dead ringer was a device that was basically a bell and a long cord that led into the coffin. If someone was alive, they would pull the cord and a bell would ring. This invention saved more than a few people back in the day. Their families were able to dig them up in time to save them. She continued. Now, back to Mr. David Burke. He was obsessed with images of being buried alive. It was his true fear in life. To ease his premonition, he paid for the nicest dead ringer bell they made. Years later, Mr. Burke fell ill in an epidemic and died. His wife followed his instructions just as he had desired and was buried in this tomb with a special coffin that had a chain in it and attached to a statue holding a bell. A few hours after the service, Mr. Burke awakened. He appeared dead from the illness, but he, in fact, was not. The panicked man pulled the chain and the bell clanged. It rang over and over for the cemetery keeper to hear. There was just one problem. David Burke never took into account that the keeper was deaf. They assumed bell rang for hours until he finally pulled it so much he broke the chain. When his wife discovered the broken chain, she ordered the body dug up. Scratch marks were all over the inside of the lid, and a piece of chain was grasped tightly in his cold, dead hand. This sight has become famous, and people from all over the world come to hear Savannah's dead ringer clang his bell. Many people over the years have heard this bell frantically ringing for hours in the dead, still, windless night, as if the chain were still being pulled by the corpse. I assume, of course, nobody's ever videotaped the bell ringing on its own, right? Beauregard challenged. Sandy shook her head. I really don't know, but I have heard it plenty of times when I am here doing tours. Let's finish out the tour by visiting One-Armed Jack. She took the group down toward the marshy river that ran along the cemetery. Beauregard grabbed Amber's hand and shook it. Look, there's that light again that's been following us all night. It's getting much closer. I wonder why whoever it is won't just come over and join the tour. Ladies and gentlemen, here ends our midnight tour of graves in Savannah's most haunted cemetery. Let me introduce you to Jack Powell, or, as the locals call him, One-Armed Jack. He was a shrimper in Thunderbolt. During a particularly good heavy haul one night, he got his lantern and arm caught in the netting as they were hoisting up the rig. When the machines wrenched up the shrimp nets, the lamp got tangled and it pulled his arm right off at the shoulder. The severed arm, still holding that lantern, flew into the river and Jack screamed in pain. His fellow shrimpers tried to pin him down and control the bleeding, but Jack was in shock and, in an adrenaline-filled panic, knocked the shrimpers off him and dove into the water to retrieve his arm. Within a few minutes,
Jack sank and bled out. His body was found here on the banks of this cemetery 2 days later, but they never found his arm. He was buried here in this grave a couple days after that in 1975.
That's not very scary, Beauregard scoffed. Why are residents scared of a man who died in a fishing accident?
Sandy let out a crooked smile. Oh, folks aren't scared of one-armed Jack. They're scared of his arm. People see just his arm holding the lantern, floating around the cemetery looking for its owner.
Beauregard busted out laughing. Oh, please, I can't take it anymore. I can't believe you guys pay any money to hear this stupid stuff. Really? You think anyone's going to believe an arm is just out there floating around in a graveyard? Come on, Amber. Let's go home. This tour is such a joke. I swear this is such a racket. I would love to scam folks out.
The laughing man turned white as the light that had been stalking the group off in the distance rapidly approached. His eyes focused and his jaw fell wide open as it became apparent that the reason he could not see anyone holding the lamp was because nobody was. A translucent arm holding a railroad lantern drifted by Beauregard and attached itself to a one-armed man in the crowd. Sandy turned to the man ghost and said,
"Okay, Jack, it looks like your arm finally caught up with you. It's time for you to rest now."
Jack smiled and then became fuzzy as he turned into mist that settled over his grave. Beauregard was too petrified to move. All he could do was reach out and cling onto his assistant's hand. Sandy spoke up loudly to the group.
"Okay, my friends, it's time you return to your resting places."
It was then that it struck Beauregard. He had been so wrapped up in himself that he never paid any attention to the rest of the people on the tour. It now occurred to him that they were all dressed in what they were buried in. He assumed they had come from a fancy party, but they were wearing burial suits and dresses. The panic resided as his curious mind started to take back over. He thought to himself, "Was I so worried about proving this all was fake that I did not pay any attention to all the tourists in period clothing?" Sandy waved at the group as they all, one by one, glowed and turned to a green mist. The streams of ghostly vapor disappeared into the fog as they returned to their individual graves. Beauregard finally stammered out,
"I'm sorry, I didn't believe you. I'm sorry for everything I said."
Sandy smiled. "I'm always glad when you say that to me. I'll see you tomorrow night, and you can annoy me again." The tour guide waved a goodbye, dematerialized into a green mist, and drifted to a nearby grave.
"This is incredible. Nobody's going to believe us. I can't believe I didn't get any of this on tape. People call us a fraud. Wait, what did Sandy mean when she said she will see me again tomorrow night?"
His trusted companion reached over and pulled off his baseball cap. She rubbed the painful spot on his head. "Our car crashed coming around that corner and flipped into the cemetery gates. You suffered a head injury, lost all your memory, and were in a coma for 6 months before you died. I was thrown from the car and died instantly. Beauregard, we go through this exact routine every night." Somewhere off in the distance, a raging fire could be seen surrounded by partygoers clanging glasses to festive music. Children's screams carried over the creaking with sounds of the strange fruit swaying in trees. A wolf howled as the dead ringer bell rang out frantically in the night. 8 wailing mothers' souls drifted out over the marsh to the undertones of Masonic chanting. Beauregard looked down at his feet as they started to glow and turn into mist.
"No! No! No!" he screamed as both he and Amber crossed over into soul wisps of green smoke and settled once again into their graves. This is Savannah's Dead, written by Taryn P. Lupo, narrated by Adam Lishua. If you like this audio, please consider helping Taryn out by purchasing this and his other ebooks at any major online store.